I want to talk about Jägermeister. Dad, what do you know about Jägermeister?
I mean, well, really, all I know, it's got a really awesome stag logo. What else do I need to know about Jägermeister?
Well, you should know that you've been drinking it all wrong this entire time.
Damn, that's cold. There's a right and wrong way to drink it?
Yes, there is, Dad. You should be drinking it ice cold, at 0 degrees Fahrenheit, to be exact.
Well, you know what? That explains a lot. I've just been pulling it straight off the shelf.
Oh, Dad, I'm so glad I got to you in time. No, that is entirely wrong. The only way to serve Jägermeister is ice cold. So wherever you're at, if you're hanging out with friends, or you're at the bar, or you're helping your dear sweet father try and get right, call the shots. Cheers with ice cold shots of Jägermeister. Damn, that's cold. And remember to check out Jägermeister at www.draftkingsxjagermeister.com. Remember, drink responsibly. Jägermeister liqueur, 35% alcohol by volume, imported by Mast Jägermeister US, White Plains, New York. Lots of things go better together. Hockey, food, golf, peanut butter and jelly, Gojo and Golic, Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. What? But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Gojo and Golic, Mike Golic Jr., Mike Golic Sr., Claudia Bellafato, one final day here all together in the DraftKings studio in Boston. What a lovely week it's
been. I'm going to miss you guys.
Are you really going to miss us that much?
I'm going to miss this.
Cars for Kids stuck in your head before the show
this
morning?
No, that will be stuck in my head now forever. There, right? No, but it was nice. It was nice to have the energy in here. And
we had late night
last
night,
soon again.
Right? I mean.
I'm surprised you guys didn't sleep here. Are you sure? Yeah. I don't know if I believe you. Because you were here watching
the
draft.
Well, we do have the comfy couch.
We do have the comfy couch.
So there was a thought that if we stayed through the entire first round, that we may just sleep here.
Because we did come here last night, put a bunch of social content out there for you, at Gojo and Golic on Twitter is where you can check that out. But we stayed here to make sure that we all took in the draft together because we've got a great show for you guys that, as always, you should download, subscribe, rate, and review. Leave us a 5-star rating for and check us out live Monday through Friday here, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern on the DraftKings Network. Of course, you can check out the Best of Gojo and Golic on VSiN, wherever you hear that, from noon to 1 p.m. Eastern on the radio. And for a full recap of round one of the NFL draft, Claudia, we've got an awesome show. What's coming up?
Yes, and if you said that you thought it would be this offensive heavy, you're probably lying, because cue the quarterback. Six signal callers go in the top 12. We'll get a reaction to the action. Matt Miller from ESPN and Fox Sports. Carmen Vitale will join us. And what's in the box? The wine box.
Thank you.
Says. We open our draft time capsule. Like I said, you guys were here late. We're going to dig into everything. Just overall reaction, though, Senior, were you super surprised at all the offense? I know you said, though, six quarterbacks was something you saw.
Well, yeah, we definitely saw some records, tying records, six quarterbacks, offensive players that were 23. We'll get into all that. But I thought the thing that struck me was the chalk early on.
Yeah.
You know, of what you hear. Remember, it's always lying season. But still, some of that stuff comes to fruition at times. But it was just chalk, 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 chalk all the way until we'll get to that number eight pick by the Atlanta Falcons. But it was just going right along as everybody had thought.
Yeah, I think we had become so familiar with so many of the names during this draft cycle, even by the end. Like, I love the NFL draft. I'm already sitting here thinking about, all right, night two starts at 7 tonight. I'm supposed to go to a housewarming party, but can they put the draft on here? Because the second and third day of the draft becomes the really exciting time when the best teams are going to find a way to fill out their roster. So I'm a sicko. I love the draft. But even getting towards last night, it's like, all right, we've talked about all these prospects so much. I mean, hell, this is a year where we know offensive linemen's names. Multiple. It's exciting.
And they're hard to pronounce.
Fantastic. Majestic times. Yes, they are a little bit difficult to pronounce. These fan bases are going to have their work cut out for them. Shout out to the sports information directors. Yours is the kingdom of heaven. But last night was, even by normal draft standards, yeah, unusually chalky near the top in our evaluation and apparently the NFL's evaluation that don't always match up publicly. We talk about the lying that goes on. And so this year it seemed like the truth was a little bit unavoidable.
Yeah, but boy, offensive heavy. I mean, just incredible where we went from the quarterbacks to all the offensive positions. We knew it would be heavy from wide receiver and offensive line, and it was. But still, the quarterback position had to shock everybody.
I was going to say, six quarterbacks and 12 picks is just insane.
I called it. Yeah. I called it.
I'll fully admit, I never expected Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr. to be first-round quarterbacks, let alone Claudia to insert themselves the way they did.
Let me ask you guys this. Do you think it was more because a need of the teams or just the talent and the depth of this class?
Well, I think it was more need of the teams. Yeah. This is the most overdrafted position there is, bar none. So you're going to reach a little bit at times. And we're going to find out. Remember, this ties a record, 1983, when there were six quarterbacks taken, the first one being John Elway, the last one, by the way, being Dan Marino. Throw in the Tony Eason's and Todd Blackledge's and Ken O'Brien's in between there. Here, it was one Caleb Williams, and the sixth quarterback was number 12, you know, to the Denver Broncos. So that was a bit of a – I thought there'd be six, but I thought it might be someone coming up late in the first round to grab that sixth quarterback. There were six quarterbacks by 12 picks. That was a bit stunning.
I was going to say, like, with Dan Marino, like, the guy had a howitzer strapped to his shoulder. Yeah. Like, there was no secret as to why you would go up and say, yeah, we're going to take Dan Marino at the end of the first round. The physical gifts seem obvious. Here it's a little less so, and I'm with you. It is so need-driven when we look at the teams that were involved here. Now, Minnesota, relative to what we expected, that maybe they'd have to trade up into the top five to go get J.J. McCarthy, ends up only having to move one spot to get him at 10 and secure their quarterback, but at a time where, hey, when you let Kirk Cousins walk, but you've still got the rest of this team in a place that for so many looks like a playoff team potentially, you needed someone other than Sam Darnold to walk into the season with. For the Denver Broncos, fresh off a disaster with Russell Wilson and with Sean Payton sitting here wondering, why did I come back necessarily? This was another one where it felt like they couldn't walk into the season and justify to ownership, their fan base, or anybody else that our plan at quarterback was this incomplete. And so they've got to come out here and say, the way Sean Payton is apparently, that, hey, the line from Sean Payton that we heard through Adam Schefter was, back when Patrick Mahomes was coming out, Sean Payton was all set to take him at number 11, and then the Chiefs traded up to 10 to take him there, and that he feels as sure about Bo Nix in this year's draft as he did about Patrick Mahomes back in that draft. Do I believe that? No. But is that what you have to say right now in the position Denver's in? Whoa. Absolutely.
We'll pull the reins on that one.
Yeah, no,
but remember, going into this draft, Sean Payton had never taken a quarterback in the first two rounds of a draft as a head coach. That goes by the wayside. He would have
taken Patrick Mahomes, so half credit.
Well, no, I'm not even going to give him half credit. He gets the guy he wants. He was in Denver and didn't have the guy he wanted in Russell Wilson, who's in Pittsburgh now. So he gets the guy he wants. But as we talk about these guys and where they fit in the surprise at number eight, let's also remember we had that graph, the hit rate for quarterback, first-round quarterbacks on a second deal is actually 46%. It's actually under 50%. And you go back to that 83 draft. You had the hits, Elway, Kelly, Marino, Hall of Famers. You had the misses as far as living up to Todd Blackledge, Tony Eason, Ken O'Brien.
So why don't we, in that regard, then mentioning all of them, start at the top, because the top of the draft went the way that everybody had predicted and expected. Caleb Williams goes number one overall to the Chicago Bears. And, Dad, we'll get into winners and losers, but, man, it is hard not to wake up in Chicago and feel like you won the entire first round of the draft, considering you started off, you had the first pick, you knew you were going to take Caleb Williams for months, and then also landing Roma Dunze at 9 out of Washington as that young quarterback receiver combo to already go along with what you had in DJ Moore, Keenan Allen comes over, and an offensive line that had been much improved through your draft picks over the last few seasons. This feels like the start of something potentially very special in Chicago, which we know with their recent quarterback history at the top of the draft is a feeling they're going to have to try and get used to around there.
DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Roma Dunze, they pick up DeAndre Swift. Their defense, end of the season, was one of the best defenses in the league.
Yep.
As we said yesterday, Justin Fields has to be in Pittsburgh going, what the hell?
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
What's going on?
You know, is there something I did wrong?
Where was this? Because I still buy into Justin Fields, and we'll have to wait and see because Russell Wilson right now is the guy there. But Caleb Williams is set up for success about as good as we've seen a top pick be, because normally a top pick goes to a bad team.
Yeah.
But this is a team that's building, so kudos to Ryan Poles, the GM there, and what he's been doing.
So how much room, though, is he going to have, you know, now that the ceiling is so high, he has all these pieces around him. He has to show up, right? There's no excuses. Like, yeah. Where's the room for excuses at this
point? Oh, no, and recent history is not going to help that pressure either.
Exactly,
we've
right.
talked so much about that Houston Texans team that is going to be in the back of every team's mind that drafted a rookie quarterback in the first round, and we'll get to that when it comes to J.J. McCarthy, because I actually think the Vikings kind of did a Costco Houston Texans from last year in the way they approached the first round of this draft. But, no, Claudia, you're right. There's a ton of pressure on Caleb Williams, but that's also a situation he's very used to. There's been pressure on Caleb Williams since he showed up on Oklahoma's campus. That certainly doubled up when he transferred to USC with Lincoln Riley, and he's always been a guy that's courted the smoke. He conducts himself in a way, he puts himself out there that knows, hey, I'm going to get a lot of flack back. We saw this last season after the Notre Dame game when they started to hit the skids. Everybody was waiting to pile up on dude. So he's used to that. That's not going to be any surprise for him. Now he just gets to get acclimated with an offense that's got another new coordinator. Now he's not carrying that baggage. It's his first NFL right. coordinator. But walking into this season, still in the backdrop, is Matt Eberflus was a guy whose job was on the line at the end of last year, potentially. They bring him back now. What do the Bears need to do and accomplish this season in order to keep this franchise and this coaching staff intact? Because I think that kind of continuity for Caleb early in his career is going to be the most important factor.
First off, no disrespect to Costco, the way Mike mentioned that. I love your food
samples. I love the Costco.
Costco's
love the food
great.
Samples there. Yep. But, I mean, what a difference. I mean, we talked about how, and I even covered called a few of the Bear games, that I just didn't think Luke Getsy, the then offensive coordinator, and Justin Fields were always on the same page. Now both are gone. Shane yeah. Waldron in there taking over as the offensive coordinator. But think about how the team that had the first pick and took a quarterback from last year to this year are set up. What Chicago has as opposed to what Bryce Young had in Carolina. I mean, what a monster, monster difference. So to your point, Claudia, the Bears should be able to hit the ground somewhat running. Detroit has that division right now. It's their division. But now we have, obviously, Minnesota and Chicago as far as teams that are going to have new quarterbacks, seeing where they're going to fit as Green Bay, you know, is still in love with Jordan Love.
There you go. Had to get the pun in there.
Had to do it.
2 and 3, Jaden Daniels and Drake May come off the board, respectively, to the Washington Commanders and the New England Patriots here. I know Claudia was very nervous watching Drake May play basketball in the lead up to his draft pick the other night here.
Just
you
aren't
want
man.
That written into his contract that despite the family history, we need him off the basketball
yes.
court.
And I get it. He might not be out there, first of all, might sit behind Brissett a little bit, but we don't need you hurt. Just wait. Just read the playbook. Get ready for us. Please.
Yeah, I mean, two very different situations, though, to Claudia's point, right? Like, Jaden Daniels probably going to be expected to come in with Cliff Kingsbury right away and be yep. the guy. And with Drake May, the Patriots do have some options, you know, having the quarterback situation they've got in that room to maybe bring him along. There's the thought, I think I heard Bill Belichick talking with McAfee, that, hey, there's some stuff with Drake May that he could use a little bit of polish on here. And so do you try not to rush anything now that you've got a new regime and really try and give them the long runway to make this as successful as possible?
Yeah, you bring in Jacoby Brissett. He's there, so he's a guy that maybe could bridge there a bit. But it was interesting, Bill Belichick breaking down Drake May of some of the good throws he had, but also for a guy that big, kind of bailing a bit, throwing off his back foot, kind of bailing out of the pocket when there wasn't really a lot of pressure around him as well. I like Drake May, but of the quarterbacks that got drafted, he has the least experience, right? I mean, he started, I believe, the least amount of games.
Well, I mean, relative to a class where Bo Nix played for 8 years yeah. and had 61 starts, like, this is a different time. We've
right.
talked about it with the pandemic era guys. You are getting more veteran quarterbacks coming out here. Like, let's put it this way. This isn't Mitch Trubisky. Like, this guy's at least got multiple years as a starter in North Carolina.
He has 20-some starts. Mitch had 13.
Yeah.
But you haven't had the great run of Carolina quarterbacks and Mitch and then Sam Howell and now,
well, yeah.
you know,
you didn't
Drake
have a great
May.
Run of Ohio State quarterbacks you until you had C.J. Stroud, which yep. is a reminder that circumstance dictates a lot. And that's why, to that point, him bailing out of there, I think those are bad habits that came because he never had anyone to block for him.
Yeah.
You watch North Carolina the last couple of years and show me the help outside of Josh Downs 2 years ago that he had there. So, but that's on New England now, is you've
right.
got to coach and create an environment where that's not happening, where you don't have a Derek Carr under siege every play reinforcing some of those bad habits. So those two picks there. Jaden Daniels, the frame is the concern, but again, this is a guy that's continued to improve at every level, so there's no reason to believe he can't continue that.
Just know when the play's done.
Yes, biggest thing.
Because he's a guy that will go for those yards, and there's a time to do that, and there's a time to hit the deck. So that's something that he's going to need to learn because, boy, he is something to watch.
So those three, everyone kind of expected. Yeah. We'd all talked through and kind of prepared for that here. Eight, Claudia, is where things went off the rails here. The Atlanta Falcons woke up and chose violence against their fan base once again.
We needed a little shock, though, right? It was a bit too chalky for me.
A little juice.
Why not? Let's go get Michael Penix Jr. out of Washington, although we just signed Kirk Cousins at 35 years old to a four-year, $180 million contract. Let's bring in Michael Penix Jr. So he's 28 when that contract for Kirk Cousins is over. Everybody was shocked. Even more shocking, though, was the fact that James Palmer, NFL Network, said the Seahawks, Saints, and Raiders all tried to get into the top 10 for Michael Penix Jr. Falcons GM Terry Fontenot said, well, this is why we did it.
If you believe in a quarterback, you have to take him. And if he sits for 4 or 5 years, that's a great problem to have because we're doing so well at that position. So it's just as simple as if you see a guy that you believe in at that position, you have to take him.
And like I said, he's going to be pushing 28, Michael Penix Jr. at the end of that. So that doesn't make much sense to me. Something else before I bring this to you guys. Kirk Cousins' agent was asked, Mike Garafolo posted this on Twitter. Yes, it was a big surprise, he said. We had no idea this was coming. The truth is the whole time the league had no idea this was coming. We got no heads up. Kirk got a call from the Falcons when they were on the clock. That was the first we heard. It never came up in any conversation. So it was a shock to everybody on the inside as well as the outgoing.
There was a great video, Dad, of the draft war rooms, which had 30 people in each of them, were masses of humanity inside these buildings, of Terry Fontenot, it looked like, explaining to Arthur Blank what was going on with this pick in there in a way that I don't know if Arthur Blank looked excited about or not.
We did what?
Yeah, two. hear me out. Two quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Super flex league. No, but I think to Claudia's point, this goes back to what Diana Rossini came on with us and talked about the other day. She said Michael Penix Jr. was told to her the quarterback not enough people were talking about on the outside, but on the inside where, hey, if you're one of the teams that cleared him medically, which was the big flag on him, this was an incredibly productive player at the college level for the last couple years at the helm of what you could argue was the best offense in the sport. That being said, Dad, the confusing part of the situation, because I think both you and I love Michael Penix Jr., the player, love the young man, but look at the situation in Atlanta and go, all right, you guaranteed Kirk Cousins $100 million over the next 2 years. You just said, best case scenario, hey, this quarterback gets to sit for 4 or 5 years. I get the Green Bay model is enticing, but you have got one older injured quarterback right now that you just paid a bunch of money to, and to Claudia's point, an older injured quarterback that you just drafted to potentially sit behind him until he's in his late 20s and then go and be the guy that takes over here. It's a head scratcher for a team that most people had penciled to win the NFC South this year once they acquire Kirk Cousins to not get more immediate help.
I you know me, I love the quarterback. I've said this for a while. I think he could be the best quarterback in this class, but it is a head scratcher. They were just two wins less than the team that won the division in Tampa Bay.
Yep.
Then they get Kirk Cousins. So you thought they'd go on the defensive side to get some help. So I was a little surprised here. Now, Terry Fontenot, the GM, is living the Green Bay model here, right? Which worked once with Aaron sitting behind Brett Favre and looks like it's on the road to possibly working again as Jordan Love really improved through the year last year as he sat behind Aaron Rodgers. So we'll see. And I mean, it's got to be at least 2 years for Kirk Cousins, right? From the money standpoint, he's a cap hit at 25 this year, 40 next year, and then 57, which not going to happen.
Yeah.
His dead cap is, obviously it's not happening this year, 90, but next year it's 65. The year after that, it's 25, a little more manageable.
Yeah,
so
it's essentially a two-year deal. It's like the deal Daniel Jones side, but on steroids.
But we've seen quarterbacks play older, right? Kirk Cousins is 35. If they're doing well in the next 2 years, you're not sitting. You may have to actually redo his deal to keep the cap hit down.
I was going to say, Terry said it. He's like, if he sits for 4 years, that's a good thing for us. And that doesn't make sense given the capital you use. Because to the point about the Packers picks, Dad, Those were picks in the 20s. Jordan right. Love, Aaron yeah. Rodgers, you got those guys at the end of the first round without like it nearly as much risk in that area. So I think that's the baffling. And you also had a future Hall of Famer in place in both times. Like yeah. you had Brett Favre quarterbacking yep. for you then. You had Aaron Rodgers yeah. quarterbacking for you then. Kirk Cousins has been a very good quarterback, but this is a much more tenuous point in his career given the injury last year.
At eight, the player you could have got to help you now. Again, I'm conflicted because I really like the quarterback. But I don't like this for the team now because, man, it is a year by year. There are a lot of veterans in locker rooms that don't get many shots. And right now they're going, okay, that's great 4 years from now, but I sure as hell may not be here in 4 years. You know, what's going to help us now? That's what players think.
Well, I mean, and for a team that could have had its pick of the defensive players in this draft, yep. was the bottom half of the league in sack production last season, could have used that for Raheem Morris. Now, reportedly, Raheem Morris loved Michael Penix Jr., yeah. went through the process here and was smitten with him. And again, in a vacuum, I agree with Terry Fontenot's statement that, hey, if you love the quarterback,
right.
you take Gotta him, you take go him. Get him no matter what. But in conjunction with all the other moves they made this offseason, and again, the fact that he is 24, the fact that I get in the last couple of years, he's beaten the injury charges. Like, he has been a clean injury sheet through the last couple of seasons at Washington. But knowing there's a bunch of surgically repaired stuff in there from years ago, it still gives you a lot of pause in this situation and becomes the real head scratcher of the first round. I mean, for Atlanta, you're going to see a lot of people give them the failing grade coming off round one because this move in context of their whole offseason just doesn't make a lot of sense.
We've been doing this show for 20 minutes and we've only talked of four of the six quarterbacks taken in the first 12 picks.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
Wow.
But the Michael Penix Jr. pick was yeah. that surprising.
Yes, it was.
And so while we're all still trying to digest that, Atlanta Falcons fans are used to being hurt. And again, this could all work out well. You could pull off the Green Bay. Even Green Bay's not always sure they can pull off the Green yeah. Bay. Coming up next, though, we will get to J.J. McCarthy, Bo Nix, and the rest of the first round here on Gojo and Golan. I want to talk about Jägermeister. Dad, what do you know about Jägermeister?
I mean, well, really, all I know, it's got a really awesome stag logo. What else do I need to know about Jägermeister?
Well, you should know that you've been drinking it all wrong this entire time.
Damn, that's cold. There's a right and wrong way to drink it?
Yes, there is, Dad. You should be drinking it ice cold at 0 degrees Fahrenheit, to be exact.
Well, you know what? That explains a lot. I've just been pulling it straight off the shelf.
Oh, Dad, I'm so glad I got to you in time. No, that is entirely wrong. The only way to serve Jägermeister is ice cold. So wherever you're at, if you're hanging out with friends or you're at the bar or you're helping your dear sweet father try and get right, call the shots. Cheers with ice cold shots of Jägermeister. Damn, that's cold. And remember to check out Jägermeister at www.DraftKingsXJägermeister.com. Remember, drink responsibly. Jägermeister Liqueur, 35% alcohol by volume, imported by Mast Jägermeister U.S., White Plains, New York. All right, round one continues to roll along here, or did roll along. We roll along with yeah. round one would probably be the right words to say that, but
Atta
I'm
boy.
Sleepy, and so we're yeah. working on it here. Mm-hmm. Six quarterbacks in the top 12 picks. We got through four of them in the last segment, Dad, which leaves us with J.J. McCarthy, who the Minnesota Vikings end up only having to trade one spot to get to from 11 to 10 in order to take there with their first pick in the first round. And then Bo Nix, the one that I think, as surprising as Michael Penix Jr. was,
yeah.
and after that we were kind of ready for anything here, still seeing Bo Nix go at 12 to the Denver Broncos ends up becoming another stunner in the first round as we get to six quarterbacks in 12 picks. So of those three, Michael Penix Jr., J.J. McCarthy, Bo Nix, the most surprising probably Penix, or
Penix,
did Bo
yeah.
Nix even jump over?
No, I think Penix because they just signed Kirk Cousins.
Sure.
I think that was the big thing. We knew Denver needed a quarterback.
Desperation.
We knew Minnesota needed a quarterback. We didn't think Atlanta needed a quarterback right now, and they could really help themselves probably on the defensive side of the ball. Because they're right in that division, as we talked about. So that's still the most surprising to me, even though I'm a big Penix fan. J.J. McCarthy went right where everybody thought he would, but Minnesota got to basically stay where they were. They just went – Minnesota made two trades. We'll get into the other trade that they made. I like the second one they made, though they did give up a good amount for that, I thought. But they moved the one spot up with the Jets. They swapped there, and they get J.J. McCarthy, who, again, you look at quarterbacks – and how quickly they're going to assimilate to the NFL. But what helps is, what do you have around them? All right?
Sure.
So for Minnesota, you get Aaron Jones over there. Madison didn't work out after they got rid of Dalvin Cook in Minnesota. So he's gone. I believe he's with the Raiders now. So you have him in the backfield. You have Justin Jefferson. You have your monster receiver.
Which you could just start it there and go, hey, you're a rookie quarterback. Yeah. And Justin Jefferson is your number one wide receiver. Yeah. Life is pretty good.
By the way, T.J. Hockenson, who had come over a couple years ago from the trade
October.
In Detroit. So you're in good shape there. So you're set up pretty well as a quarterback to not have to carry. That's the one thing you don't want to happen with a young quarterback is for them to carry the entire load, right?
And so, if there's one thing J.J. McCarthy's used to not doing,
carrying
it's not carrying
load.
The entire load there as he was part of that 15-0 Michigan team that had tons of great weapons all over
it. You don't want him to do that, and he won't have to. Kevin O'Connell, you know, the former quarterback there, you know, calling the plays and running the offense. So we all thought that pick was coming, though you and I think others have been a little bit like, wow, J.J. McCarthy, a first-round quarterback, and then the thought of maybe at five with a trade. But then Bo Nix. Now, listen. Sean Payton, he's a hell of a coach, a hell of a quarterback coach. We saw what him and Drew Brees, what they did together.
Sure.
Bo Nix in that same area of size.
Sure.
But he got his guy, right? This is the guy he wanted, not so much the guy he had to have in Russell Wilson in Denver. But, man,
this is most people's estimation of second-round quarterback that because they were in such desperation mode, because they had failed so famously with Russ, they had to reach and go up and get. We had Bo Nix on the other day, incredibly likable kid, incredibly mature football player, 61 college starts across two different schools, multiple coordinators, and he's made it work. The aptitude, all these things that for a lot of these guys, for J.J. McCarthy, for Jaden Daniels, for him, a lot of guys have talked about the neck-up stuff more than ever this year, the intangible traits that make a lot of these quarterbacks go and are so difficult for most NFL teams to try and figure out with these players. But still looking at the physical skill set for Bo Nix that doesn't involve the strongest arm in the world, the game that generally tended to be better off schedule than on, and when it was on, it was still a lot of RPO-based stuff around the line of scrimmage, which I grant you, NFL teams doing more than ever now to try and meet their young quarterbacks halfway. It's still, this one is definitely a big-time reach. There's no other way to explain it, but Denver did not have a lot of options, and so they had to go and make this choice.
And why didn't they have options? Because people could have said, well, you could have traded back and got him. Well, the pick right after them was the Raiders.
Right.
And the Raiders had to be sitting there going, what the hell? Six go before us?
Oh, yeah.
Because, Aiden O'Connell's going to get the shot. They pick up Gardner Minshew, but they were talking about the possibility of a Michael Penix who ends up going eight. So you couldn't really if you wanted to drop Denver because maybe the Raiders would have taken Bo Nix or I don't know, but it just seems a little high. But we talked about this with quarterbacks. You take a chance. You know, if you're going to trade back on a quarterback and not get him, as we said, the most overvalued position in the draft that a lot of times they're going to go higher than they should.
And it's less dire than ever, the misses in the first round. It's less damning to the future of your organization than it's been prior. So I don't know. That one, I mean, even J.J. McCarthy for me, like I understand we went through the whole draft cycle. We thought they were going to have to go up to four. They only have to go to 10. It feels like savings. But still, this is still overdrafting relative to where I thought this quarterback was going to go originally. And so, you know, I understand Minnesota, again, kind of similar situation, felt like they had to do something after letting Kirk Cousins walk. And relative to Atlanta, relative to Denver, this feels like something we've all been talked into more.
Right. Yep.
The pre-draft propaganda worked
because
this feels like it makes a lot more sense to most people, even if I still look at this and go, yeah, I don't really know if I believe this quarterback can be the next franchise guy for them in that way. You combine it. I said they kind of did the Costco Houston Texans dad with their second first-round pick. They trade up from 23 to 17, and they take Dallas Turner,
that's
who
a good move.
Was in contention for the top edge. But, Dad, you look at what they gave
they
up
give
to
up
go and
bit.
Get that pick. They trade with the Jacksonville Jaguars. They get the 17th pick, and in exchange, the Jags got the 23rd pick that they turned into Brian Thomas Jr. out of LSU, a 24 fifth-round pick, a 25 third-round pick, and a 25 fourth-round pick. So that's a lot of mid-round picks altogether to move up and get this guy. Much the same way the Houston Texans mortgaged a lot of their draft future to go back into the top five and take Will Anderson Jr., but
I like the move.
Will Anderson Jr., one defensive rookie of the year.
Like,
that's
like the move.
The bar when
I
you
like
give up
move.
This much capital
I
for
agree.
These guys.
I like the move. I think it was a good move. You're going to get a productive player right away.
I mean, let's put it this way. He's not Will Anderson Jr., though. No, like when not. It comes to
he's
what
not.
You can expect immediately, this is much more of a projection for this player who has insane physical ability, like more than Will Anderson Jr., but is not as game ready day one a player as Will was coming in. Where Will Anderson Jr. was captain for the Texans to start this season. Like that guy came in and immediately gave you that juice. It remains to be seen if Dallas is going to be able to give you that much. Oh, by the way, Dad, on the quarterback front, by the way, we had this news from the draft yesterday as well, Claudia, as we looked at the Minnesota Vikings, the New England Patriots, all apparently reaching out to the Chargers to see, hey, seen you kind of doing some things differently around there in that organization. Jim Harbaugh, strange cat, new organization. You guys interested in dealing this Justin Herbert fella? To which, thank God, they were told flatly no, Dad, in this conversation, because anything else would have been patently absurd.
Would have been a monster, a dead cap hit. $63 million.
Yeah, financially it would have been stupid, but also Justin Herbert's really good at football at the quarterback
that
position.
That was never going
to
happen.
I tend to think that you should want to keep those guys around, especially while you're trying to nurse a wide receiver room back to health after letting everybody who's been productive for you leave.
You know what? You never know if you're going to get a yes unless you ask.
Oh, I get it. I'm just glad that the answer was flat out no in this situation. Yeah. You can't play if you don't win, and for the Patriots and for the Vikings, I get both of those teams, given their situations, trying to call and ask. That being said, Dad, Justin Herbert gets a little bit of protection here as well. So Joe Alt, our buddy, is going to take care of him in Los Angeles. And round and round we go. Jim Harbaugh, smart man, said we view offensive linemen as weapons here.
Yeah, that might have been a little much, but that's not a shock.
A little much.
That's
correct.
I think they're great protectors.
Weapon.
However you want to define weapon, I guess. That's Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah.
You know what?
An object for blunt force trauma is a weapon.
It's not shocking.
If you beat someone down with a hammer, it's still a weapon, isn't it?
Okay. All right. Are we done?
No.
Okay.
We're done when I say we're done.
Okay.
Jim Harbaugh, stop making me fall in love with you. I'm sick of this. You're at Michigan for the last decade. You're one of my bitter rivals. I'm not supposed to do this. And now all of a sudden, you're waxing poetic in the pre-draft process and on draft night about beef in a way that makes me fall in love with you. How dare you?
It's a lot of beef went.
Ridiculous.
Surprisingly enough, as we'll continue with the first round, the O-line hit the under in the first round, which was somewhat surprising to me.
The O-line hits the under. Big news out of the wide receivers both taken in the first round. Certainly the top players there. But also, what happened with some other wide receivers around the NFL in the lead up to the draft here? Howie Roseman of the Philadelphia Eagles refused to stop making deals this offseason, refused to stop making news on draft weekend with one particular wide receiver in there. It's amazing. And again, we talked about it. This is a first round that largely felt chalky all the way down. There wasn't a lot of exciting moves. But I think as we hand out grades for winners and losers going forward in the NFL draft, we're going to see a lot of teams got better, specifically up front and out wide. So we'll keep it rolling along. Still plenty more to get to from the NFL draft. And, oh, by the way, the NBA played playoff basketball games last night. I don't know if you guys heard.
Growing up playing sports, I learned really quickly that how you do the little things is how you're going to do everything. That's why coaches always harped on us about having our hand behind the line on sprints or picking up our locker, because that was going to directly translate to critical moments on the field, making sure we're lined up right, taking the right steps so we can go out there and execute and win ball games. Small actions can have big benefits, just like how taking care of your gut can support your entire body's health. That's where our friends at Seed come into play. Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic is going to benefit your gut, skin, and heart health in just two little capsules a day. I just got my welcome kit and started taking Seed's DSO1 myself, and I'm loving it. I love the convenience of being able to have it in the cabinet with my other supplements because you don't need to worry about refrigerating it, and I love the free travel vial that comes along with it. I'm constantly on the road, and so being able to take DSO1 with me on the go is huge for my lifestyle here. I'll tell you what else I love is the fact that it's backed by science. DSO1 was developed in collaboration with Seed's scientific board and based on their foundational work in probiotics and the microbiome. And with new clinical trials and breakthrough research published in top scientific journals, Seed's probiotic research, development, and innovation programs make DSO1 a product you can trust. And it's great with convenience, too. Probiotics and prebiotics work best when they're used consistently, just like any other routine health habit. And Seed's subscription service is going to easily help build DSO1 into your routine, again, with no refrigeration required. So, trust your gut with Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/gojo and use code 25GOJO to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/gojo, code 25GOJO.
avoided going down 0-3 to the Knicks with a dub last night, 125-114. And B dropped 50 points, which was crazy. But that wasn't really the headline, flagrant foul, but also the fact that we learned he's not just dealing with a knee, but also he was diagnosed with Bell's palsy, which he went on to say has sort of been affecting his vision. Here's what he had to say.
It's pretty annoying, you know, with, my left side of my face, my mouth, and, and my eye. It's been tough, but, you know, I'm not a quitter, so got to keep fighting through anything. It's unfortunate. That's the way I look at it.
And he came back to say, again, it's annoying. My dad actually has this. He's had it for a while. So it is more annoying than anything. You have to put eye drops in your eye to make sure it does, you know, it's not dry.
It's basically like a paralysis of one
side
of the face.
Yeah, so that side of the face sort of. But my dad doesn't play basketball. So that's the question, right?
Sure.
If it's affecting his vision, that's an issue. But also if he's dropping 50, I don't know if it's going to be too much of an issue.
Exactly. He does say he uses eye drops a lot. It is something that can go away in a few months,
start to,
or it may stay. You know, like you say, your father had it, it may stay. So we'll wait and see. But putting 50 up in Philly, getting that win, making it a 2-1 series, that series hasn't started
yet
because the home team has won every game so far. But that series, to me, is the most fun one to watch of this first round because it is, without question, the most physical.
Yeah, the most physical, both of these teams. Clearly some animosity because I think, you know, Philly, New York, both passionate bases, franchises that found themselves and believe themselves to be very tough. There was always going to be headbutting here. And, Dad, certainly not surprised Philadelphia won this one, right? They've been in both of the first two games. Looked like in the second game they could have been in position to steal. And so Joel Embiid, who had already played really well, I mean, we've been wowed by this guy's toughness.
Yep.
Going back to the first couple of games, comes down off the knee injury, off a lob to himself, and we thought was going to end everything. And instead, he's basically still been a walking double-double, 30-plus points. And now 50 in this game, showing out in front of the home crowd. This always seemed like a series that was primed to go much longer because these teams had played tightly contested games all throughout. But, Dad, to your point, got extra chippy last night.
Yep.
It had already been banging on the inside, but then we had the moment and the dust up here. Joel Embiid assessed a flagrant one as he got knocked down on the ground,
right.
And while he was on the ground,
under the basket,
Knicks center Mitchell Robinson, who was had been dealing with an ankle injury coming into all of this, and so was worried about that, is up above Joel Embiid, and Joel Embiid ends up laying on the ground and sort of pulling him down to him here. This was the explanation Joel Embiid gave and the response from Knicks head coach Tom Thibodeau.
My daughter plays, obviously, Mitchell Robinson, jumping, and, trying to make sure he doesn't land on me because obviously we know the issue that I have when, Kaminga landing on my knee. So I kind of had some flashbacks, when he came down to it. It's unfortunate. I mean, I didn't mean to hurt anybody. I just, in those situations, I gotta protect myself.
Which one? The one they called or the one they didn't call? Okay. Oh, okay. All right. I just want to make sure we have clarity on that.
Did you see that as the proper, was it flavor one or?
I don't even know. Like, I guess they had, 33 free throws? Yeah.
So that sounds like a man who's trying not to get fined at the podium.
Exactly
despite
right.
being very angry in this game. But, Dad, Joel Embiid basically saying this was self-preservation. He was trying not to get stepped on at the bottom of this. Mitchell Robinson, thankfully, not seriously hurt after this experience. But the Knicks calling this a dirty play, do you think it is?
Listen, I think, as I watched it, I saw a guy who got his knee hurt by getting landed on. He's under the basket, and a big man is coming down, and I don't think he wanted to get stepped on. Do I think he was targeting Robinson's ankle in that blink of an eye? No, I do not. Was it a little more extracurricular? Probably, but he's right under the basket, and a big man's coming down. So I'm kind of going to do whatever I got to do to not get stepped on or landed on.
There's a pretty solid – him pulling him down in that way.
Yeah. That's what I mean. It's a little extracurricular for sure.
I was going to say, to me, it's probably a little dirty.
Yeah.
It's dirty, yeah. Guys. Like, it's dirty.
It looks like a dirty play. As someone who, you know, at times would flirt with that line, and I know you were the same way,
yes.
Like, you recognize it, and here it's just readily apparent because there's no pile or anything else that you can see here. I get not wanting to get stepped on, but usually the move would be to try and slide yourself
move it away real quick.
Not like
reach
that,
and grab
trying to
the
pull
guy.
The guy down with you.
That's almost worse because you're going to pull him down and you could lay on your knee. It was dirty, and he was frustrated. He's been sort of frustrated throughout this whole series, so I think that just came out. Right? And he's like, if I'm dropping 50 points and if we don't win this game, I'm pissed at the refs. So it was dirty in my eyes. When I watched that, I said, what was that?
Also, I see Thibodeau being upset because I believe Embiid took more free throws than the Knicks team. I think it was took 21 free throws. So that's got to be a little frustrating to a coach as well.
Yeah, like, listen, is this the most egregious thing I've ever seen?
No, not really.
Like, you've got to do a lot worse than this for me to totally lose my mind about it. But it definitely flirted with the line and probably stepped over it. Yep. And I'll be curious, assess the flagrant one here. We'll see if the league says anything more to that.
Yeah.
I don't think, let's put it this way, they're not going to take
him
off the court.
He's not getting suspended. He may get fined.
It's not Draymond.
Yes.
It's not Draymond.
It's not Draymond kicking someone in a couillon.
If we've got the Draymond line of demarcation here, we are firmly on the side that keeps you on the court, but may lighten your wallet a little bit there. So that was that game, the series going how we expected here. Another series kind of going how we expected, Dad. Oh. Denver Nuggets take a 3-0 lead. They come back from down double digits again. At home this time for the Los Angeles Lakers at Crypto. And this seems like it is every bit as sweepy as we predicted to start the season. Aaron Gordon this time, the party that goes off and has the kind of game that I said he can be the difference maker on a team. He's one of the most unique players in the NBA at power forward, and he showed you why last night.
These guys had four players that are starting five in the 20s. I mean, scoring, I mean, it was really incredible obviously they're a better team than the Lakers. Because they're going to play better teams than the Lakers, they better knock off the being down the way they are and always having to come back. That game, too, remember, they were down 20 and came back. It's been down 12, down 20, down 12, and they've come back. It's tough to live on that one, but their third quarters have been incredible. They've come out and dominated.
And what they've done to D'Angelo Russell the last 2 years in the series there. D'Angelo Russell, who had a real renaissance in the back half of the season, but much like happened last year against Denver, became unplayable by the end there. No points last night in this matchup, Claudia, as the Lakers are now on life support to the point where LeBron James is out here doing the usual it's bigger than basketball routine.
Which I'm not surprised. I will say, if you have any faith, which I don't think you should, but the Lakers plus 3,000 right now to win this series. The interesting part of that, though, is they have been getting the lead. So if you guys watch or you watch the highlights, what is it? Why are they falling apart like this? Are the Nuggets just that good? Are they just too deep?
You only have two guys. You have two guys and two older guys. That's it. Now, Austin Reeves scores in the 20s. Russell doesn't do a thing. But you don't have enough. You don't have enough players that can pick up the slack for your two great players in LeBron and in AD. So I always am interested in this part of it, though, with LeBron, or really any pro athlete.
You hate this.
Well, I mean, I really do. Listen, for fans, they go and they get to pay their money and watch a game. It doesn't affect their lives. For professional athletes, of which, you know, I was happily one for a number of years, this now was my job. This is how I earned my money. This was my living. So when LeBron ends basically the presser with this, it gets me a bit.
And it's just basketball. At the end of the day, it's just basketball.
I mean, it's your job. It's your livelihood. I mean, it's very very convenient to say at that point.
But I'm like, I don't understand how you can get mad at this point, because this is what LeBron does time he's on the verge of getting knocked out of the playoffs. This is like the January meltdown before the trade deadline.
Yeah.
This is part of the LeBron James season cycle where he reminds you he's a father, he's a husband, he started a school, it's bigger than basketball.
I get it. And it's not just LeBron, because others have said it as
well. No, but he's great at this.
He is. It's very convenient at this point. And yeah, that's just a bit much for me. This is, hey, we're getting our ass kicked. So, but hey, it's just a game.
It's the smile in the hands for me.
Yeah.
It's like, we don't care.
Christ, Falker, it's just
we're gonna
a game.
We're going to get squished again.
Game,
we don't
Falker.
Care.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you guys are all crazy for losing your minds over the fact that we're about to get swept by the Nuggets and lose like 12 straight games to them.
Yeah.
Don't mind the man behind the curtain. Instead, train your eyes on our sweet friend Emerson Lazzia next.
Welcome back Golic. We had a lot of draft questions answered last night in round one. Still, some remain. And maybe there are some questions that we're just not asking. But don't worry, because Emerson Latia is going to ask those questions in what he is calling an award-winning series. Here's Emerson on sports.
We're here to talk about the draft. Not the one where people fled to Canada to avoid it, but the NFL draft, where people willingly go to Canada to play in the CFL if they're not picked. What do you think of the draft?
Oh, I mean, I have a lot of thoughts about the draft. Very exciting time for a lot of young men who are getting ready to change their life.
No, are you cold?
Oh, you mean like the win? I didn't understand your question.
Browns have had a lot of high first-round picks over the years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to lose out on all of them. Why don't they just pick the good players?
Well, that would seem to be the correct thing, but what we have is 32 teams with 32 ownership groups. All these people jumbled together are supposed to dissect college athletes and their abilities at the next level. The Browns are just very bad at it.
So if they're bad at it, and the Browns typically lose the draft, who's won the most drafts? Who has the most points ever?
Well, you don't keep score in a draft.
The draft lasts 3 days, which feels a bit excessive, but apparently it's big business, with 54 million viewers last year, despite there being no winners, no points scored, and only losers. If you're picked by a team, do you have to go there or can you refuse?
You can refuse. It is a very, 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 very small group that could do that.
So that has happened before?
It's happened. The last time was Eli Manning. Before that, John Elway.
Seems kind of like a jerk thing to do. So cowards like John Elway and Eli Manning dodge their draft status, much like John Wayne. You can look it up. But somehow the greatest player of all time was almost overlooked.
This is Tom Brady, seven-time Super Bowl champion, widely considered a GOAT in his sport. But as you can see in this photo, he is clearly a man.
Why wasn't he picked first overall?
So he became the GOAT, but you're drafted off what you did in college based on his athletic profile, which we all see that combine video of him running very slow every year. Combine that with stats and what he did in college, and at that point, he just didn't look like a guy that you would have taken in the first round of the draft.
It seems a bit fishy if you ask me. The NFL holds an annual combine. Guys in shorts and t-shirts, they run straight, they run in dirt, they run around cones, no pads or helmets. My question is, at what point during a football game are these events normally held? I never see them.
So, great question. They're usually not held during a football game. None of those things you mentioned.
Then why do they do it?
Well, you can't play a football game. It's the off season. These guys don't want to get hurt. And so you got to do things that sort of mimic what happens in a football game in other forms that they can't necessarily replicate there for safety reasons.
Maybe that's why there's so many bad picks.
So to me, the draft still feels like a huge waste of time. But maybe you'll enjoy it when these guys finally start playing in September.
Our thanks to our intrepid reporter, Emerson Latia, doing the Lord's work there to try and nail down the real stories of draft week.
Asking the questions that nobody asks.
That's what he's here for.
Yeah.
And a lot of really interesting Shrek memes. So
outside
of that, Dad, Emerson, a clear winner of draft night one in the NFL with that kind of reporting here. We know, coming off, it's our job to also hand out winners and losers of draft weekend. We've talked a lot about the quarterbacks, so obviously you can include those. But, Dad, night one, give me a winner first for you from draft
night listen,
one.
Chicago is an easy choice, right, getting Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze. You look at Minnesota, we all got sucked into the Minnesota's going to have to trade up to get their guy, J.J. McCarthy, and they only had to move one spot. So it almost feels like a win. I don't know if I'm sold on J.J. McCarthy, but to them, they are, and they only had to move up that one spot. But then even though you talked about the amount they gave up for going 23-17,
yeah,
trading with Jacksonville.
Healthy Hall.
I liked that move of getting Dallas Turner, you know, the edge rusher from Alabama. So I like, not sure about the quarterback, but I know that's who they wanted. So, again, that's all that matters, who they wanted. But I like the move to get the defensive player.
Yeah, and you know what? Listen, like at 23, we talked about it, being able to keep that other first-round pick, having to move up.
Right.
Edge was another big-time need for this defense as well for Brian Flores. And all the edge rushers off the board by 19. Jared Verse goes 19
right
to the Los Angeles Rams. You had already had Leatu Latu off the board
right
to the Indianapolis Colts at 15. And so it was starting to get hot there. You can understand that move, certainly. I'll stay defense, too. We talked a lot about this guy in the lead-up to it. But Mike McDonald getting to sit at 16 and get Byron Murphy falling to him, his Justin Madubuike in this newly imagined Seahawks defense that we'd imagine is going to look a lot like what we had in Baltimore in terms of structure and scheme. And now to have a defensive tackle like that that can be a dynamic rusher for you, that can still eat up space on the inside as they now try and reset the foundation of that group in Seattle, feels like a home run for them. They didn't draft Jalen Carter in the first round last year, and there seemed to be a lot of consternation about that among Seahawks fans. They go out here and make it right immediately with their first round pick.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that guy play and what he's going to do. As far as the other side, if you have winners, you always have losers. I'm conflicted with Atlanta because, as I said, I think Penix could be the best one in this class, but man, I just don't know about that fit for a team that could win.
Sure.
Right now, they didn't get anybody that will help them right now in that eighth slot when there certainly were plenty of players available for that. But one of the losers, I think, is a team that ended up not even picking in the first round and had a first-round pick. The Buffalo Bills didn't trade once but traded twice and got out of the first round. And one of their trades was with the Chiefs, who ended up drafting the fastest guy ever running a 40-yard dash in Xavier Worthy from Texas. So you look at Buffalo in the offseason – by players leaving on their own or them getting rid of players, it was kind of a mass exodus there for Buffalo. You know, you have obviously Josh Allen, but it's going to be starting to build new around him, and you got nobody in that first round to kind of start that. Now, they had some pickups in the offseason, I get, but they had way more people leave from that team that couldn't win, that can't get by Kansas City. And then it just seemed ironic they made a trade with Kansas City.
I was going to say,
Kansas City moves up and gets a wide receiver.
It's really the optics of this that are as bad, because it's still to be determined. In a draft class, we talked about deep at wide receiver. There's still
what
talented players on the board in the second round that they could get and absolutely start to rebuild that wide receiver room. But the fact that you do it with the team that's beaten you in the postseason constantly. And I get Xavier Worthy is 165 pounds soaking wet.
He is.
But you gave Kansas City another one of the fast guys in an offense that desperately needed receiver. You could say, I mean, I'm sure Bills fans, you could try and sell it as chestnut checkers, but at this point, Kansas City's been beating you in everything, and you just handed them the keys to another meme to get you later on.
You got a rookie speedy receiver in Worthy. You got a guy who really stepped up in Rashee Rice, who'll be a second-year player.
Yeah.
You got Isaiah Pacheco in the backfield, who's going into, what, his third year. Travis Kelce, who's older but a Hall of Famer, who still can work that middle of the field, and a guy named Pat Mahomes. So they're sitting pretty good right now.
Yeah. Things are working out pretty well for them. Loser, I'd probably say Denver, just because you had to go up and reach for the sixth quarterback in the class to try and make this work, because you'd put yourself in such a bad position during the course of this offseason. I know Sean Payton is super high. I saw him on McAfee show saying all the right things about Bo Nix and about how accomplished he is from the neck up, and how he was the most, you know, technically is the most accurate quarterback single season in the history of college football after this last season. But man, for the position they're in that division, too, where now Jim Harbaugh's back in town, and we expect the Chargers to get better sooner than later. The Raiders became competitive last season, although they're an interesting team with what happened with quarterback with them now. And, of course, Patrick Mahomes, the final boss living inside that house. The difficult task still looks pretty difficult for the Denver Broncos in trying to get this thing back and get it started. We are still just getting started here. More winners and losers, and looking at the first round of the draft as we welcome in our friends Carmen Vitale, Matt Miller, and hour number two to look not only back at what happened, but forward at rounds two and beyond in the 2024 NFL Draft here on Gojo and Golic.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.